Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 307. Hello and welcome to the three-time Academy Award nominated podcast, The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Now, welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to listen to this podcast. If this is your first time here, thank you. Maybe I met you at the UC Davis conference this past weekend as this podcast is coming out, or maybe I will meet you at a future conference. I look forward to it if that is the case. If you're listening to this in early October when this releases, I will be at the AMSA Pre-Med Fest at USF in November. Go check that out at premedfest.com. Our guest today is one that may surprise some of you. Our topic today may surprise some of you if you've been listening to my podcast for a long time. Now, I've been doing this podcast now for 6 years after I decided that there was not enough good, positive information out on the World Wide Web. And so I started a website, medicalschoolhq.net, back in February and March of 2012. Now, part of the reason I didn't think there was enough positive information out there is because there was one site that had a ton of information, but was pretty negative. And so I talk about that site a bunch, and I have actively discouraged students from using that site. I've reached out to that site previously. I've met the founder previously. And I've reached out to the people who are running it day in and day out and didn't really get any good reception from me reaching out. Until a couple weeks ago, as we're recording this, when the founder of Student Doctor Network reached out to me and said, hey, we should talk. We should look at joining forces in some way, collaborating in some way to figure out how we can move forward. And so I got on the phone with Dr. Lee Burnett and we had a great conversation. And he said, Ryan, I listened to your podcast. I know what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about SDN and I agree with a lot of it. And we are trying to change that. And that moment was great for me because Student Doctor Network is a massive, massive entity online. and students are finding it and using it. And I'm one small piece in this pre-med puzzle, and I can't keep everybody, shepherd everybody away from the student doctor network. And so if we can work together and make student doctor network a better place for you, then I'm all for it. Collaboration, not competition, is something I preach every day, every Wednesday when this podcast comes out. At the beginning of this podcast, I say that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. And I live that day in and day out. And so from this point forward, hopefully, we continue this good relationship with Student Doctor Network, and we will slowly but surely turn SDN into a better resource for you. That is my goal. Hopefully, that is their goal. And we will have a discussion with their founder, Dr. Lee Burnett, right now. Lee, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
When did you first realize that you wanted to be a doctor?
Oh my gosh.
Can you think back that far ago, ago?
I sure can. I can almost picture it in my head. It was the 80s. I was in high school, and I know that probably sounds like old timey days, but I remember 80s, and my mom's like, you need to pick a profession that you want to go into. And for some reason, it just that one just appealed to me. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a doctor.
And let me guess, you liked science and wanted to help people.
Yeah, you've heard that one before.
Just once or twice.
Yeah, no. Well, at least that's probably more the case than I was in it for the money or something like that.
Yeah.
Which you do hear sometimes. But it was my dad worked with a lot. He's not a physician, neither is my mom, but they both worked with an organization that my dad worked for the state of California, and my mom worked for a nonprofit organization, and both of them ended up working together to help promote primary care, family medicine specifically in California. So it was just a natural for me. So I would meet all these physicians that would my parents be working with, and they were all residency program directors, and they all seemed really cool. And they weren't like those stuffy, super subspecialist, kind of docs. Not that they all are. They certainly are not. But they were just really, kind of hip, cool folks. And this was California back in the day. So I just had a lot of good family medicine role models, and it was something that really appealed to me. And so back in the 80s, I was like, gosh darn it, that's what I'm going to do. And sure enough, that's exactly what I did. I went off and went into osteopathic medical school coming out of college, and then wanted to stay in California. So I went to Western University of Health Sciences down in Pomona, did that, graduated, and then did a year of a family medicine program at a DO program in Downey, California, which was absolutely fantastic, unopposed residency program, great experience, especially in internal medicine and surgery, which I just loved it. And then the next 2 years finished out at UC Irvine in family medicine. And that was another just spectacular program.
For somebody who doesn't know the term unopposed, what does that mean?
Ah, that's a great question. So it's very important when you're in primary care to try to find a program, at least in my opinion, that is unopposed, meaning there are no other residency programs that are competing for patients at whatever facility you're at. So, for instance, when I was at Downey, it was the whole hospital, the clinic, everything was just for our family medicine residency program. So we saw everything from soup to nuts, from ER to ICU to surgery to cardiac cath lab, everything. You had family medicine residents in there working right alongside the attendings, and it was a tremendous experience. I just learned just a fantastic amount that I might not have had the same opportunity had I been, say, maybe did my first year. And I'm not harping on UC Irvine, it's a great program. Mm. But had I been at UC Irvine, they had their residents working in a VA hospital or the UC Irvine hospital there in Orange, California. And so you were fighting for patients with the internal medicine folks, with the subspecialists, with the surgeons, you name it. And so you didn't get quite the same depth and breadth that you did at an unopposed program. Now, the program, UC Irvine Family Medicine Program, they were able to have a hybrid where they also had a local community hospital. I think it was Tustin at the time. I know it's changed names, but we were unopposed at that hospital. So we had some of our rotations in the subspecialties at UC Irvine in Orange, California. And then we did our more primary care internal medicine surgery over at the Tustin Hospital. So that ended up being kind of the best of both worlds.
This was late 80s, early 90s when you went to medical school?
Yeah.
I don't want to super date you, but I want to set the scene because you mentioned going to an osteopathic medical school, and there seems in my mind there's a huge shift since that time with kind of the views of osteopathic medicine, and obviously there's been a huge explosion in osteopathic medical schools. Yes. What was the thought process back then? Of going to a DO school, and you mentioned wanting to stay in California. Was that really the biggest driver, was just location?
You've touched on a big chunk of it, right? So born and raised in California and absolutely at the time did not want to leave it. Now, subsequently, I'm in the Army and have had experiences all through the rest of the country and overseas, but that's beside the point. I wanted to stay in California. I had gone to UC Davis for undergrad. I had good grades, but my science GPA, I got an F. I got some really bad advice. And in fact, this advice was what led me down the road to eventually create Student Doctor Network. So we'll come back to that later. But so I got some advice. I had not been doing well in genetics, and I just had a ton of other, tough classes at the same time, and I just wasn't putting the effort into genetics. And I was like, forget it. I'm just going to drop out of this class, and ended up getting a big fat F. And I should have not listened to advice from other people who are like, don't worry about it. You can get an F, and then they'll drop that out of your GPA calculation when you're applying for medical school because you can just retake it, and then you'll get an A, and it'll all be fine. And of course, that was terrible advice because that F just sat there, and it was big, fat F in genetics, which is a hard science, and it just looked terrible. So the rest of my GPA, it was pretty good, but it wasn't to the level that you needed to get into a UC, program. So, my MCAT scores were good. This is back when they used to, use the different scale than we have now. Yeah. But I had good MCAT scores, but that science GPA was just a big collar around my neck, and was not good enough to get into any of the UC schools or Loma Linda. A friend of mine, who is actually a DO, Mitch Kasavac, he passed away a few years ago, but he said, why don't you take a look at DO schools? I'm like, what is that? Is that like a chiropractic school, or what are you talking about? There's no way I'm going to do that. It's like, no. It's like chiropractors branched off of us, blah, blah, blah. And I explained the history. I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. I'll come take a look and research it some more. And this is really, truly pre-internet, pre-World Wide Web days. So there wasn't any real information out there. And I went down, interviewed at the school, took a look at it, and said, wow, actually it's pretty legitimate. They've got what seems to be a very solid core program. And then the slots where they rotate for MS3, MS4 years were fantastic. Good county hospitals, great experience. And then the people coming out of there, the graduates, they were getting very good residency slots. So it's like, I don't, this wasn't what I was originally planning to do, but this gets me where I want to be. It keeps me in California. And by the way, I wanted to do primary care. So they have a huge match rate into family medicine, which I think even to today still holds very true. And so it ended up being a great match, and I'm happy that I did it.
Do you use OMT in your practice?
That is a great question, and I do not. And the reason is, it really, I think it works great. I actually see DOs if I'm having like a back problem or any kind of discomfort in a joint or something, and they'll just do magic. And it's one of those things, though, you got to do constantly. You always have to be practicing to maintain your skills. And if you don't continuously practice it, then you're going to lose it. And I'm just one of those unfortunate ones who, when I went into my own practice back in 2000, graduating out of residency program, I just didn't put the effort into continuing to maintain that skill. And it's now something that I kind of regret because I work full time now with the Army. And especially when I was working with pilots, pilots really, they don't want to take any medication because if they take medication for their back pain or joint pain, it grounds them potentially based on the medication. So they really appreciate the osteopathic manipulation. It can get them feeling good and back into the cockpit without taking any meds. And so it's really where you have somebody who's a good DO who really keeps on top of their OMT skills. They can just, like I said, just do absolute magic.
You went into private practice after residency, but you've been in the Air Force for a long time. What got you involved in the military?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not going to lie. It's the same thing I think a lot of people get into the military for. This was back in residency when I was still at Downey as an intern, first year of residency program. And I was dirt poor. Even with the paycheck I was getting as a resident, I was still in debt with all those student loans and car payment. And I just did not have the money to make ends meet. And a recruiter just happened to magically come by. They seem to always know when to get you. And I remember her coming through and she explained the program, and it was a reserve program. And they'd pay you a certain amount of money if in return you give a certain number of years back once you graduate from residency. While you're in residency, you don't have to serve any time at all, which is okay, that's great. So it sounded to me like a pretty good deal. This is 1997. So, I signed my name, and serving in the military is something that I'd always wanted to do anyways, but this was an opportunity to be able to serve, but at the same time also get some financial help, which I desperately needed. And it worked out really well. So I got money through the rest of my residency for the next 3 years. And at the end of that, when I graduated in 2000, then I owed 2 years in the reserves for every 1 year that I took a paycheck from the Army. So that was a total of 6 years in the reserves. So this was 2000 when I graduated. And then, you know, it happened obviously in 9/11, and it completely changed the dynamics of everything the military had been doing, as I'm sure you remember, because you served in the Air Force. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What years were you in the Air Force?
A lot later than you. I was in the Air Force. I commissioned in 2005. 2005, and then served active from 2010 to 2015.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of years.
Yeah.
As you know, really got into pretty high op tempo coming out of 9/11, and what had been originally the reserves. Oh, you know, what they told me was like, it'd have to be World War III before we'd ever call you up, and if we call you up, you're going to be just backfilling a hospital, and all the active duty folks will go overseas. And certainly after 9/11, that changed, and it became very much the reserves had a large chunk of the Army's medical capability. Mm-hmm. And so physicians were being deployed on a fairly routine basis. So I got called up in 03 for the initial push into Iraq, which we didn't actually, our CASH Combat Support Hospital didn't make it overseas. We sent all of our stuff over there, and then we were supposed to be part of the Northern Front coming from Turkey down into Iraq. But if you recall, back in 2001, Turkey voted and said, no, we don't want any troops here. So that left our CASH with all of our equipment over off the coast of Turkey and nowhere to go. So we ended up kind of just sitting at Fort Lewis, Washington, which is a beautiful place, but it rains like the dickens during the wintertime. But we were up there from January until basically end of May, early June. And if you recall, the war had started, and then by May or whatever, the war was seemingly over. George Bush had landed a plane on the aircraft carrier, and mission accomplished. And it was actually kind of interesting, because you think, you know, when I was a civilian, like, oh, I'd never want to go to war if I could avoid it, right? But really, I was very disappointed, as were all of my colleagues, like, gosh darn it, we missed our one opportunity to, you know, to go serve our country overseas and take care of soldiers. And we were all kind of disheartened by it, not knowing that by no means was mission accomplished. We still had many more years to go. In fact, you know, we're still in Iraq in some form. And then also still in Afghanistan. So We all went back home, went back to our practices. I had a civilian practice at the time down in California, and it was a good experience. I'm glad I had done it. But after that, I was like, well, I'll just finish out my 6 years and I'll get out, not knowing that I was going to get called up again in 2005. So I got called up in 05. By then, it was a pretty routine rotation. They had it. Where you would get on a plane, you'd fly to a location, they'd get you within 2 weeks all prepped and ready to go overseas, and then you'd fly straight into straight over and end up over in Iraq. And so I served with a combat support hospital for 4 months over in Iraq. And a little side story, this was actually kind of cool. While I'm there, they're like, hey, we need a doc to cover the Saddam trial. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? I raised my hand. I was like, yes, I'll go do that. Because nobody else wanted to do it for some reason. I don't know why. But I definitely want to go do that. So I got the opportunity back in 05, early 06, I think it was at this point. And I got to actually go be at the Saddam trial and see all of how all that whole operation was going, and it was really fascinating. Mm. And it changed my opinion of the military, this is something that it was great to be able to help take care of the soldiers, but now it was something more. I could see the bigger picture, the operational or strategic level, and what we were able to do as a nation with trying to make things better. And, you know, own political thoughts aside, you know, we were definitely trying to do what we could to make life better for the people over there. Yeah. And so that went on. I was there for a week watching the Saddam trial and being the physician there in case something happened. And that was really something to be there and watch history happen in front of you, not be a part of it, but just watch it. And I just found it to be so interesting. It's like, well, maybe this army thing is something that I want to stay in with and go long term with. So, came back, went back to my practice, started doing, making sure I was doing my drills on the weekends and the two weeks a year, and then in 08 got called up again. I went back to Iraq, did 3 months that time, and then came back, and decided at that point, you know, I think I might want to do this full time. I really enjoy it. I enjoy the times that I'm going overseas and I'm serving with other physicians, nurses, specialists, taking care of, you know, our men and women who we put into harm's way. And it was just such a rewarding experience. And it's a rewarding experience, period, to be a physician, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to help people. But here's somewhere where you could just see, like, every single thing you did made a difference. Back in the civilian world, I was treating hypertension, treating diabetes, you know, treating hyperlipidemia, but you just don't see it. You know, you can't see right in front of you something, you know, making a huge difference. It's great. I love it. And I love being a family doc and seeing people grow and having the honor and opportunity to take care of families. But so much more enjoyed taking care of soldiers and their families. So started looking around, and in 09 went full-time with Army Reserves, went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and that was my first time being out of California for any long period of time, and ended up really, really enjoying it, and then decided in 2011 going full-time active component, and then decided, you know what? What I really want to do is I want to really learn what it's like to be in the infantry, and so I volunteered to go be at the 82nd Airborne Division, which is also there at Fort Bragg. Mm. And had a tremendous experience, was there for 2 years, and had the opportunity to deploy as a brigade surgeon. And it was a rough deployment, but I worked with just some fantastic physician assistants and physicians and medics and really made the difference when it absolutely mattered. And honored to have had the opportunity to have done that. So after that, then just have continued to be in the military, did a year at in Kansas, and then 4 years actually ended up over in Korea, serving with the 2nd Infantry Division and then with the hospital that we have over there for a couple of years. And now, that's my life story. Now I'm here in Fort Polk, Louisiana, with the 115th Combat Support Hospital. So that's it in kind of a big nutshell.
Yeah. So what what turned from a need for money, you have found your calling in life of serving the men and women of the Army.
Absolutely. I just love it. It's a great experience. And the other thing that I really appreciate as a physician is it's a single healthcare system. When I was a family medicine doc out in Southern California, I had to deal with all the different insurers, and you couldn't order some of the tests that you just knew you had to order. Like if I needed to order a CT scan or MRI, and you know it's the algorithmic next thing that you do as you're working somebody up for something, the insurance companies wouldn't let you do it, and it was very frustrating. Or you needed to get a medication, and the amount of paperwork and effort that went into it was just crushed your soul, and it just saw it getting worse and worse and worse every year that I was in private practice. So getting the opportunity to be in the military where it's a single healthcare system, and you can order what you need to order, you get the medications you need to get, that part is very refreshing.
Yeah. You mentioned going back to your college days, your F, getting poor advising, and at some point that kind of being the impetus for Student Doctor Network. Talk about where that brainchild came from.
Yeah, well, it goes back to when I was in medical school, right? So 1993 is when I started med school, and it was there. I think at the time we had, 17 osteopathic medical schools. There's obviously more now, but back at the time we had 17 osteopathic medical schools across the country, and we really had no idea, like, are the things going on in my medical school the same things that are going on in other medical schools? Do they have the same problems that we have here, or the same issues? And you know, you'd meet people at conferences and stuff, and you'd talk with them, and we have the same problem or whatever, and like, oh, okay. So I came up with the idea of let's make a newspaper. We called it the Osteopathic Pulse. It was myself and a friend of mine named Fran, who's also in med school, and so we created this newspaper, and it had articles from each of the different osteopathic medical schools in the country, and we distributed it for free based on, you know, it's all paid for with advertising, distributed it for free to all the schools. So all their first and second years had access to it. The third and fourth years, of course, were out doing their rotations. But so we did that in 1994. And then that continued in 1995 and then 1996. Now, this is about when the World Wide Web started to become a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So about 1995, probably early 1996, I figured out, how does the internet work, and how does dial up to the internet? What's all this stuff, TCP, IP, and oh, it's all crazy. It was really complicated back in the day. But I learned how to do HTML programming, which is pretty simple, and took all the articles out of the took all the articles from the newspaper and put them onto the internet so that those third and fourth year students could see it online. And I don't know, maybe we had 20 or so people ever use that website, but it's where I learned how to use the internet, and created a little chat room, and then also created a forum, which back in 97 or 98, I don't even know if MySQL or PHP had even been developed at that point. So literally it was this flat file database forum where every time you updated a page, it literally created a new page. So a thread would be a page in and of itself, and it would just create a whole new page, and there was no database or anything behind it. So that was the old days of the internet. That's over 20 years ago now. And it just evolved from there. So by 97, I was graduating from med school. The newspaper, we weren't really doing anymore because we just didn't have time because we were, you know, busy third and fourth years. But the internet was so interesting. I just continued to develop stuff there, and then created, at that point, by about 98, 99, that's where you start having MySQL and PHP and all that. So we had a forum, which I don't even remember what that forum was, like UBB or some platform like that, but created a forum, and that wasn't even supposed to be the part of the site that we were really interested in. We were trying to do was just have good quality content about other schools and interesting things. And there were only about two or three other websites out there at the time for medical students. So there was one by Jim Henderson, and there was another one by Nancy Steen, and there was a dental network out there as well. And So, and then there was ours. So I got together with them online and said, hey, why don't we just bring them all together and create one thing that's not just for DOs or MDs or dental students or whatever, let's call it. Let's bring it together and we'll call it the Student Doctor Network, since it'll be for everybody. And again, we weren't really that focused on the forums. We were really focused on everything else, all the articles and how to get into med school or how to get into dental school or this and that. And the forums were just an afterthought. We had also like a chat room and stuff. But over time, you know, 2000, 2001, 2002, the forum just continued to get bigger and bigger. And before you knew it, that was like everything. Like basically when you said Student Doctor Network, people just assume you're talking about the forums and not anything else, any of the other components of the site. So it was a fun time back in the early 2000s. There wasn't much else out there as far as forum sites. There was no Facebook yet. There maybe MySpace was starting to come around, but that was a unique little thing. And so it was the one place where people could go and get advice or do peer, you know, peer-to-peer support. And it was a lot of fun and it was a neat community. And then over the years, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's just like, I just couldn't believe how, busy it got over the years to, you know, where we are right now. I think I was just looking at it a few minutes ago. There's like 3,000 people on there right now, which is just fantastic. You know, it's great.
What are you doing? Why are you hanging out on my website?
I'm happy they do. Yeah. It was something that we created kind of as a love because we wanted to give back to the community that given so much to us. And getting back to that story that I told you earlier, I got really crappy advice back when I was at UC Davis, not from the advisor, just from other friends or whatever. And that really then over time, it kind of drove what we were doing as far as a Student Doctor Network and making sure that we had good, reliable information. And then we had the peer support area with the forums, and that's really what drove it and how we ended up where we're at today. Now, one thing that has happened is the internet's changed dramatically over the last like 20 years, right? So in the early days, it was maybe we'd have 40 people on the forums, or for a while there it grew and we were quite excited. I remember back, I think 2003 or so, we would have 200 people on the forums, and the forums would actually start running really slow because they couldn't keep up with all that demand. And it's just grown and grown. But what's changed has been really the dynamics of how people relate to each other on the internet. Back in the good old days, people were very, I think more not as jaded maybe as people are now. There certainly wasn't as much trolling or that sort of thing that you see nowadays. So it was a very, very positive community. And in fact, whenever, like if let's say there was a little flame wars, a little tuss or something like that, and a moderator would go in and say, hey, cool it, guys. The moderator would get beat up for having any input on the conversation at all. Internet was much more of a, this is an area where we share ideas freely and we don't want moderation. But that's obviously changed a lot over the years.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear kind of the thought behind what you wanted SDN to be and where it is now, and kind of the birth of what I've been doing because of that. At what point do you think, from the forum specifically, did you see a switch from that more positive, uplifting collaboration to more of the trolling and more of the heated kind of flame wars?
Yeah, that's a good question. It kind of, I think it might almost be like a boiling frog syndrome, right? Where you're just kind of sitting there and you don't notice it. So I think what you see today on the forums, or just forums in general, I'm not talking about just specifically Student Doctor Network, whether you're on Reddit or whatever else, the culture changed gradually. It wasn't like an overnight thing, but I really, when I go back and look through posts, I really start to see it around, I'd say 2008, 2009 timeframe. And I don't know if it has any imp- relation to the economy or just a generational shift, or that's also when Facebook was really had taken off. The number of people that are on the internet now, 20 years later than there were, you know, back in 2000, is astronomical. So I think just as more people came on the internet and things became even maybe in some respects more anonymous, people became had that anonymity of the keyboard and gotten to bad places where they wouldn't have gone had they not had that same level of anonymity. So what really happened, at least for Student Doctor Network over the years, is we had this initial model, and a lot of the moderators, you know, they stay with the site. Everybody volunteers their time with the Student Doctor Network, other than the few people who we have who keep it going. But like all the volunteers, myself, we all volunteer time. All the moderators, myself, we all volunteer time, and we had old rules back from the early days of Student Doctor Network where, hey, you know, our users don't want to be moderated. Let's leave them alone. If something really gets out of hand, then we'll go in there. But usually the forums would kind of take care of themselves. If one person would say something rude, two other people would come in and say, hey, knock it off. Don't be a knucklehead. And that worked pretty well. So as we started to go into 08, 09, 10, that's where we saw that, in retrospect, started really seeing a shift where that self-regulation wasn't happening as much anymore. And people, for whatever reason, don't use the report bad post button as much as I would like. Almost as though people just kind of expect bad behavior rather, and they just tolerate it. But it's sad to see where we are as a whole, as a nation, or across the internet globally, that we have such a negative discourse so frequently in public forums. So certainly the Student Doctor Network, we've had to really change our moderation over the past few years from that, hey, hands off, we don't want to be thought police, to, hey, you know, we really need to keep a close eye on what people are saying, you know, be very, you know, aggressive in getting in there and removing people who are being negative, trolling. Certainly before the elections, we were seeing a fair amount of that, you know, really negative stuff. And I don't think we had any, you know, Russian, we don't have any IP addresses or anything, but I don't think we had any Russian trolls on there, but it's just the discussion got to be so, so negative. So we really had to change the way we moderated, just like I think a lot of other websites have had to do over the years. And it's kind of sad. I still wish we were back in the early 2000s. It was such a fun time, but we got to be realistic. If we want to continue to serve and provide free information to students and have a place for them to support each other and have that peer support, then we need to provide that protected environment. So our moderators have certainly changed very much on how they moderate.
So just for you listening, if you don't know my backstory, back in 2012, when I started Medical School Headquarters, it was started partly on a similar reason you started SDN, because of poor pre-med advising, but also because SDN back then was the negative place for information, to get very cutthroat information. And when I started Medical School Headquarters, my goal was, if I can take one person, and specifically a non-traditional student typically, if I could take one person who goes on SDN and reads something or asks a question and gets answers back that and they think they can never become a physician, and they leave there discouraged, I want to put out information to show them that they can. It may take longer than they expect, and it may not be as easy as they want, but I'm going to show them that they can no matter what. And so it's kind of funny how we've come full circle and we're having a discussion here, because what has now become my life's work is partly because of the downturn of the forums at SDN and that negativity there that was around. So I have to thank you for starting SDN and allowing that looser moderation, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that.
It's absolutely true. You know, it and it wasn't just yourself. I think there have been other people have kind of gone down that same road as well. And certainly the Reddit forums that have popped up over the past few years, they branched off because they felt that SDN was negative. I think to some degree, I would absolutely agree with you. Back 2010, 2012 timeframe, things were fairly negative. But I think if you took it on the balance, so actually pretty positive. Unfortunately, it only takes, you know, it's a normal human psyche to latch onto those one or two few mm-hmm. negative things, despite the, you know, 100 other positive things, right? That's normal human behavior. And when you take SDN on the balance, even when you go back and you look at the more negative time frame, by and large, the information is very positive and people are very supportive. One thing I think that's kind of different from, say, Reddit is Reddit people can up and down vote, right? Yeah. We don't really have that in our forums. And by downvoting, those ones that get downvoted a lot, maybe that are particularly negative, that might be completely truthful. You know, so maybe somebody has a rotten GPA and they're like, hey, brother, you know, with the GPA you got, you're not going to get into the schools that you're looking for, right? And it might be very truthful, but it's such a viewpoint that people don't want to hear, so it gets downvoted and disappears. So Reddit has an interesting way of kind of having this bias form based on up and down votes. We don't mm-hmm. have those up and down votes, so that bias is not, you don't see it. But again, human nature is you're gonna lock on to those negative one or two negative posts, and you're gonna, even though you may have read the other 20 ones that are positive, you're going to remember those one or two negative ones. And that's, it's tough. It's tough to, tell people, like, no, actually the vast majority of SDN is very positive, very supportive, fun, and encouraging. But yeah, there are going to be one or two people who have a viewpoint which you may not agree with, and you may take it very negatively. Mm-hmm. There are some people over, especially back a few years ago, until we changed the moderation, who were giving good advice, but were doing so in a manner that was, I had one person describe it to me as though they wanted to be like a drill instructor, like a boot camp, you know, trying to like shock people into reality. And that's kind of a strong thing to do when you're talking about people's dreams, right? It would be much better to say, hey, look, and doing exactly what you're doing with med school headquarters and saying, hey, look, okay, where you're at right now is not great, okay, but here are pathways to get you to where you need to be. So that's what we've really been working on is, hey, these people who are giving advice, where they're giving good advice, but in a negative way, working with them to say, hey, look, we appreciate you being here and helping out and really being part of the overall mission to help students become doctors. But let's go about it in a way that doesn't crush people's souls, right? And I think that has definitely paid off working with those individuals over the past couple of years.
Yeah. One of the my favorite threads posts was from a student who I did some mock interviews with, and student was kicked out of his undergrad like 20 years ago, finally realized after some events in his life that he was supposed to be a physician. And after he got his acceptance to an allopathic medical school, for some reason, I don't know why he did this, went on to SDN and said, hey guys, like, here are my stats, here's what I'm thinking, like, what should I do? And of course, everybody is like, oh, there's probably slim to none chance, right?
Right.
And I have a different question for you in a minute. But sure. But this one guy, and he the student specifically emails me this one, and it's a faculty member supposedly. It said, I wouldn't recommend this career path. Like, if a student read that, it's like, oh, a faculty member is telling me this. And so I think that's kind of the core of what SDN used to be, and obviously there's still going to be some knuckleheads that'll say that kind of stuff now. So if moderation is the way it is now, and a student goes and posts his or her story, and somebody says this, right, I wouldn't recommend this career path, would that be moderated or no?
It's a good question, right? So if the person is being honest and it's a reasonable statement, then no, it would stay up. But if someone was trying to be just a jerk and trying to crush somebody's soul for whatever reason, then no, that would not be tolerated. So it's really a case by case basis.
Yeah, and it's hard to understand what the true intentions are, right, behind text. You can't hear their tone of voice, and facial expressions.
We've all gotten an email, right, or we've typed emails where we're like not even thinking anything about it. We're like, oh, yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then somebody's like, oh my God, that's so rude. You're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Why did you put this exclamation point here?
Right.
What are you trying to tell me? Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. And that makes it that much harder.
It is.
It's interesting being an osteopathic physician yourself. It seems like there's a lot of osteopathic bashing on STN. What are your thoughts behind that?
That's a darn good question. I think it's insecurities, really. There was a thread I was looking at yesterday. It's a YouTube video by a international medical school graduate. He's a surgeon now, and I'm assuming he's doing pretty well. But he was putting out.
I might know who you're talking about, but
yeah,
we'll keep it. Yeah. Never mind.
I mean, I don't want to, I'm not disparaging or anything. It seems like he's doing well. But his viewpoint was, hey, it's better to go to, international medical school than it is to be a DO. I think statistically that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But ultimately it really got people fired up, right? Because, and it really even goes back to the very early days of SDN and where I had to put a post in there. It's like, hey, you know, whether you pick MD or DO, it doesn't really matter. Just do whatever's right for you. And we don't need to have these MD versus DO or discussions that don't provide any value. And I just don't understand why people argue about it, because at the end of the day, it just is what it is. If you got a DO degree, great, you got a DO degree. You go on and do great things. If you got an MD degree, same thing. And are there some residency programs that I could not get into because I was a DO? At the time, probably. Yeah, absolutely. But did I get into exactly what I wanted to get into? Yeah, I did. And I went into that with, you know, full knowledge. I've ever had a problem as a DO since, graduating residency? Never. Never once. Yeah. People don't really care about what your degree is. What they care about is what their friends said about you. It's like, hey, is this person a good doc? You know, that's where people are getting most of their advice. Like, hey, I have to pick a physician. Who do you recommend? Oh, go see, you know, Doc Snuffy or whoever. I see
that's a military name. Why? Who is this Snuffy person? Everybody in the military uses Snuffy.
I have no idea, but it's great. I love it. But yeah, it's. I think it's really insecurity based. I think that's people are worried that somehow they're inferior because they're going down this path. But why somebody who's going down the MD path would really care about somebody going down a DO path? I can't figure that one out either. It's like, why do you care? It's like I even put into the post on this one that I saw yesterday, the same one that we were just talking about. It's like it doesn't change the nature of it, having these discussions, whether one thing is harder than another to get into. What's the point or purpose of the discussion? I don't get it. It's something at a deeper psychological level, which I probably don't really even want to go scratching at too much.
Yeah. So about a month or so ago, you reached out to me and said, we should have a talk.
Absolutely.
Talk about what's going on at SDN, where you hope things go in the future for the future of our pre-med students.
Yeah. Well, the Student Doctor Network, like I said, it was created to be a place to provide good quality information and to help support students as they go through their journey, right? From everything from high school all the way through to residency. And it's a nonprofit organization. Like I said, I volunteer. I don't take any money from it. But what I want to do is make sure that we are meeting our mission, right, of providing good quality content and information to students so they can make good decisions. And that's where, over the last couple of years, I've been seeing your podcasts and really have found them to be quite excellent. You have a great number of people that you interview, good diversity, have some really good advice there. So my hope is that we can work with your organization and other organizations that provide, you know, really high quality, good information for free to students, because that is absolutely what our mission is all about.
For the pre-med student listening to this who maybe has listened to a few of my podcasts and listened to how I talk about the quote-unquote three-letter website that shall remain nameless, what recommendations would you have for him or her to dip their toes into SDN, to get the most use out of it, and to also help you guys start molding it into what you hope the vision of it is for the future?
Right. So I'd say a couple of things. One, whenever you're on the internet, make sure you've got a thick skin, right? People are going to tell you what they're thinking. If someone, for instance, is going into what are my chances for them, and just lay it out there, and they put their grades or you know their MCAT scores or whatever, be open to what people are saying. But on the flip side, if somebody says something you don't agree with, okay, cool, that's their opinion, and you don't agree with them, fine. You don't need to have a flame war with them. Just ignore it and drive on. That's probably a good life strategy just in general, whether you're on the internet or not, when you have a disagreement with somebody. The other thing would be is if somebody sees something that they think is inappropriate or condescending or rude or just is not part of the kind of community that you'd want to be part of, press the report bad post button. It's on the edge of every one of the posts on the forum. So that way our moderators are alerted to it and can get right in there and take care of it. Because you know, we have about 60 moderators, and obviously there's millions of posts, so they can't go over every single post every day. And we really rely on our community to give us a heads up when there's something inappropriate. So please, one, you know, take everything with a grain of salt and don't engage with somebody and try to have a flame war with them. Just respectfully disagree. And two, if you see somebody being just an absolute jerk, please report them so that we can our moderators can get in there and take care of that.
And to remember that SDN isn't just forums. You guys are creating other content, other resources for students as well.
Yeah, and the forums, again, that's the biggest part of the site now, but it's not really where my passion is. My passion is really in creating all these other free areas. So, for instance, we have something called Study Schedule that was actually originally created by a programmer at Google that we were working with. He created it as a side project, and it's really fantastic. It uses some really neat algorithms. You can go in there and say, okay, my MCAT's going to be on this date, and I want to pick, I'm going to use this study book, these courses, X, Y, and Z, and then it puts together an entire study plan for you based on what you want to use. So everybody's study plan is custom just to them, and it's just really cool, and it's totally free. We're not collecting data or anything like that. It's entirely there for students. You don't have to use the forums or anything like that. It's completely open for anybody. It's studyschedule.org is the domain name. We have Scutwork, scutwork.com. That's actually a site that started back in 2000 and recently they came and we took the site over a couple of years ago and have updated it and trying to work more with residency programs so that as people post their reviews of their residency program, that the residency program directors have the opportunity to review it and use it as a positive feedback tool. We have something new, actually. This hasn't come out yet, but I'll tell you. You can take a look at it right now. It's review2.com. That's R-E-V-I-E-W 2.com. And what we've done there is we've taken reviews from Yelp, from Google, and then also have our own database of reviews so that if, as you go to take the MCAT or DAT or PCAT or whatever, and you're going to be going to a test center to go take that test, you can pick which exam you're going to take, which center you're going to use, what state, you know, what city it's in, and it will show you a compiled report of all the different reviews. And if people say, oh, you know, this one's really noisy, or the air conditioning is not very good, then people can make a decision of, oh, maybe I want to take it at another test center. So that's something also, again, completely free, doesn't collect information. One of the key components of the site that we've had for many years is interview feedback. I mean, as people go out on their interviews for medical school or other schools, they come back and they can enter in what the questions were, kind of what the environment was like, how the interviews were done, and then that helps other students. I think that's one of the coolest things on the site. And then we also have information on all the schools. All that school information is the same kind of information you can get anywhere else on the internet. That's not particularly unique. But we have some really cool cool resources. We also have, I'm sure a lot of your people that listen are familiar with Lizzie M. She's a person who spends a lot of time on our site. She's an ADCOM member, but she created something back 10 plus years ago called the Lizzie M score. And so we created a calculator based on that, that has a bunch of information. People can put in their MCAT scores or GPA, and then it'll tell them which schools are in that zone that they should be looking at as kind of the key schools, and then which ones are more of reach schools to look at. We have a residency selector, which was we created that with Anita Borman, who created the original Red Book on selecting a residency. In fact, we published that book as well as a partner to the residency selector. We also have doctor question and answers. So pretty much every different specialty you can think of and every subspecialty, we have Q&A. We ask the same 20 questions of every single doctor. So there's a bunch of cool stuff out there. We also have another one that I really enjoy. It's a med school app cost calculator. So again, we're not collecting any information or anything like that. It's completely free. A student goes in there, says, I'm going to apply to these schools. Here's how much I'm going to spend on, not a uniform. I'm thinking of the Army now. on a suit. This is how much I'm spending on travel, X, Y, and Z. It does a lot of calculation for you. And then it tells you, hey, here's how much you're going to need to budget for your medical school interviews. So that's pretty cool. Cool thing as well.
Yeah, I just added one of those calculators to my website too. It's helpful for students. Yeah. I was going to refrain, but you brought up Lizzie M score, and I want to talk about Lizzie M kind of to close out here.
Okay.
It's funny that you brought up Lizzie M because I was at the UC Davis conference this past weekend before we're talking now, and I asked a dean of admissions who was there from a Midwestern allopathic medical school. I'm like, what do you think about Lizzie M? And he had a few choice words about Lizzie M. And I think it seems like there's a huge pushback against things like Lizzie M because it's taking the quote unquote holistic view out of the admissions process from a pre-meds perspective. And the pre-med is being told just bad information just based on stats, and the schools that may be a great fit for the student aren't getting the chance to see that student's application because Lizzie M said that the student didn't have a chance there. Hmm. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a valid point. I would say though that as long as medical schools continue to use systems that automatically screen people based on GPA and MCAT score, then the Lizzie M score is going to continue to be probably fairly valid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, it just is what it is. It's not like it's just something that somebody just took some dice and rolled it. This is based on years of evidence, and the evidence pretty much bears out what the Lizzie M score provides. Now, that being said, people should do what they want to do. This is not the AAMC telling somebody this is where you need to apply.
Yep.
This is just one tool. If you don't have a lot of money and you can't spread, you know, you can't spread yourself to across every single school application, then here's where you're going to be best targeted, and that's what that is best used for.
Okay. Good. As we wrap up here, what are your final words of wisdom for the pre-med student out there who maybe has been to SDN before and swore never to go back, or those who will go check it out for the first time now?
Yeah, you know, I welcome everybody to use a site. We're completely free. We don't collect information. We're a nonprofit site. It's entirely supported just with the ads that you see on the site. And we'll always be free, whether we have the forums or not. It's we're there to help students achieve their dreams. And don't get wrapped up around, you know, don't get wrapped around the axle based on one or two posts that you see on an anonymous forum. Really, you know, take it as a whole. Look at all the other resources that we offer, and understand where you fit in that bigger picture.
All right, there you have it. Again, Dr. Lee Burnett, the founder of Student Doctor Network, a osteopathic physician, which you heard me bring up. Isn't that interesting? An osteopathic physician founded the website that bashes a lot of osteopathic medical schools and says, oh, you're not good enough for an MD school. Go to a DO. Those are the kinds of discussions that I want to try to moderate away. We had a discussion after we stopped recording about the What Are My Chances threads. I said, we need to get rid of those, because those, you can't answer that. If somebody asked me that in the pre-med hangout, what are my chances? The answer is 0% if you don't apply, and more than zero if you do apply. That's the only real, truthful answer. I can tell you possibly this is what past data shows, but I can't show you what your chances are now. No one can tell you that. So there are a lot of things that I am interested in doing, in advising, in helping Student Doctor Network with moving forward. And I hope that you give me some time to work with them to make it a better resource. Collaboration, not competition. I hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.